All right, so the Mishnah in the beginning of the sixth parak of Bava Metzia, as we begin to learn about sugyas of Poland, tells us a basic premise about the arrangement between the employer and the employee. And so the employer is referred to as the balabais. Who's the employee? So the employee is an oman, or a poel, or a kavlan. These terms have somewhat different meanings, and that's going to affect a little bit some of the understandings that we're talking about here, especially poel and kavlan. Poel and kavlan are more specifically defined in different ways from each other. What's a poel versus a kavlan? Anybody want to help me out here, Jonathan?
Poel, I think, has just hired to work for a certain time period, and a kavlan is a job.
Exactly, right. So that's essentially a difference which is going to come up, lahalacha, in some pretty significant ways, that a poel works by the hour and he is hired essentially somewhat in a slave-like fashion, which is going to have major significance to halacha, and so you will see soon. And a uman, or rather a kavlan has a job to do. He has a specific task, whether it takes him a minute or it takes him 20 hours, whatever it is, maybe he'll set his price with some reflection of the time that goes into it, but essentially he's not paid by the hour, he's paid by the job. And that ends up making a big difference. So what is an umnin? Our Mishnah talks about hasocher as a umnin. So pretty soon on it becomes clear that poelim are included in what our Mishnah is talking about. Our Mishnah, the Gemara right away, starts talking about poelim. So what is the word umnin meant to convey? So it seems like that's a broader term. If you look, we'll mention probably a few times today, our friend of Nassim Gestetner, his sefer on Bava Metzia, Nassim Perion Bava Metzia. So he talks about the concept of an omen, which he notes based on the Tosfos, that the word omen, an omnis, is a specific job, so it seems to have a connotation of somebody who has a specific ability to do some craftsmanship. So therefore, it sounds like the word omen is meant to include both a poel and a kavlan. So our Mishnah talks so broadly about different types of workers and about interacting with the different types of workers, and the ways in which you can arrange for that basic setup and the terms that are included therein. Before we get too into it, just want to make one hosafa. So until yesterday, we were learning the sugya, or until the day before, we were learning the sugya of Lifnei Iver. And just want to make one ha'ara on Lifnei Iver before we segue into poll. Just an interesting thing I happened to come across last night in a different context, and I just wanted to fill it in and share it with you. It relates a little bit to how you treat your workers. That today in one of my Sai Sims classes, I'm going to talk about the concept of Ona, which is what we're learning on Sundays in the fourth parak, the idea that you're not allowed to oppress someone in monetary matters, which we normally translate as meaning price fraud. But the Gemara says there's two different types of onah, as we've discussed. There is onah's mamon, and there is also onah's dvarim. If you hurt somebody's feelings, if you cause somebody emotional pain, you're in violation of the isser of onah's dvarim, of the emotional component that is attached to the isser onah. So the Mishnah has, in the end of Hazav, God willing we'll see it, a bunch of examples of how you could possibly do that, different ways in which you could hurt someone's feelings, in case you need some suggestions how to do it. So Rashi in Chumash has a different one, and Rashi adds onto the list that if you give somebody bad advice, so you're also in violation of Onos Tavar. So Rabbi Aaron Levine, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in one of his books, so he notes, what kasha could you ask on that Rashi? That we've already covered that issue. Right? That's what we were talking about last week, that we know that Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol, according to the Taurus Kohenim, according to the Medrash, one of the surim that's involved in Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol is giving bad advice. So why do I need two different yisurim to tell me I can't give bad advice? he has an interesting chiddush there. He wanted to suggest that if you give somebody bad advice and they take the bad advice and they get hurt, that's when you're in violation of lifnei iver lo sitein rasha. But if they realize right away it's bad advice, so they don't take the bad advice, then it's onas dvarim, because then they realize that you're essentially insulting their intelligence and they get offended by it. So if they act on it and they get hurt, then it's lifnei iver. And if they don't act on it, then they're offended by it because they realize it's bad advice that you're intentionally giving them. So that's when it's onas dvarim. So I just thought that was an interesting idea. Especially, it also ties into the question we were asking about lifnei iver, about whether you need the person in davka to stumble or not. So that's what he wanted to suggest. This is the first time it was applied to that wing of the isser in our discussions, that the bad advice isser also, maybe the isser is davka if the person does stumble, and then if you give him bad advice and he doesn't stumble, then there's a separate isser that's nasvar. Boils down to, either way, don't give bad advice, but it's an interesting question about how those two isserim play off each other. So onas dvarim is one of the areas in which a boss can mistreat his workers. That was part of the writings there that Levin was addressing over there. And our Mishnah starts off addressing the worker-employee relationship in a way that also looks like it's talking about onas dvarim, but it's really talking about something else. Right? Because the Mishnah uses a unusual term. Hasocher es omnin vihitu zazah, which normally, how would you translate that? They tricked, right? They deceived each other. That's what the word normally means, which would be a subset of anas dvarim in addition to other things. But the Gemara essentially interprets it to mean they pulled out. They backed out of the deal. So according to our Mishnah, ein lahem zeh al zeh ella tarumis. So that's a fascinating phrase on many different levels. Many questions pop out at you when you see that phrase. What kind of questions could you ask? Just from that statement in the Mishnah. The worker, the employee, or the boss, either one of them pull out, all you have is tarumas. Do you understand that phrase? Do you have any questions, Aaron?
I mean, king always has tarumas in any case. I mean, whenever there's no tzvias mamon, or there's also, there could be tarumas.
Well, I think you have to answer a question before that, before you say that.
Is there a tzvias mamon here?
So one question is there a chiyuv mamon? So it sounds like, and that's what Aaron was already assuming, there's no chiyuv mamon. So it sounds like there probably isn't, right? That sounds like that's what the whole point is, right? You have nothing other than tarumas, so there is no chiyuv mamon. So that does seem to be a pretty much included in the sentence, but there's a pretty basic part of the sentence I'm not sure we understand unless somebody can tell me what it means. What is tarumas? Anyone want to try to explain what tarumas is?
A grievance.
A grievance. So what does a grievance mean?
Angry at each other.
Sorry?
Like, they can scream at each other.
You can scream at each other. Which is something else? A scream or what?
Be upset at each other.
You can scream or be upset. So thank you very much, Mishnah. So I'm allowed to be upset. So what does that mean? Does that do anything for me? Well, without this, without the Mishnah telling me, I wouldn't be allowed to be upset? Is the Mishnah really telling me nothing except there's no tvias mamon? Is that the point? Or maybe that's what Aaron was getting at? That it's essentially saying...
No, I mean, it could be, I know that, I think of Yisrael Salant or someone says that the chiddush is that in meaning other cases where you don't have tvias mamon, you don't have a right to have terumas. But here it's halachic qualifies that you can have a grievance.
Okay, so the first thing you want to say is that it is saying something positive. It's not simply stating there's no tvias mamon. Right, you could have read it that way. You could have read it as a way of saying, listen, okay, you have your grievance, but you can take your grievance and jump off the bridge. It doesn't do anything for you. Go fly a kite, essentially. Now you come to the court, you say, I'm very upset, and the court says, that's great that you're very upset. Enjoy it. And there's nothing we can do for you. So that could have been all that it means. Sorry? That could have been all that it means. That maybe this is essentially saying there is no monetary damages under these circumstances. But Aaron is assuming, and that's how most assume as well, that that's not what the Mishnah is telling us. The Mishnah is telling us something in between. Yes, there's no tvias mamon. That's one of the things the Mishnah is telling us. But also, there is tarumas. So what is tarumas? The David says it means you can yell at him, you can be angry at him. So it's not such a simple point, right? Because we have to figure out if it means something, what does it mean? And there are a number of opinions as to what it means. So if you want to say that it means you can be mad at the guy, like David is saying, so David is in good company. The Chassam Sofer says like that in his Kedushim to Bav Metzia. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, actually, who Aaron just mentioned, I don't know if it's from the same comment, but he has it like that as well. In the Chazon Yechezkel, Chazon Yechezkel's Chashuv HaSefer and the Tosefta, written by one of the great Talmidei Chachamim in London in the past century, Rabbi Chazkel Abramsky. So many understand that way. But does that help us? So what does that mean? So what would I have thought otherwise? Otherwise, I'm not allowed to be angry? Is that the case? Pashtus, yeah, that is true to a certain extent, right? That we know that there is an Isser of Nekimo Netira in the Torah. We actually had reason to reference that recently in a different context. So there is an Isser to bear a grudge against somebody. Happens to be, it's a little bit of a machlokus, Rishonim and Achronim, whether the Isser only is because you express something or you just think about it. That the Gemara Maseches Yuma, when it defines the Isser of Nekimo Netira, I think we had reason to mention this in the context of something else recently, but the Gemara has this very boring example. You would think that they talk about vengeance. It's a very dramatic, exciting kind of story, but the Gemara only understands it in a very boring context. The Gemara says, let's say somebody knocks on my door and he asks to borrow my iPad. So I say, no, not interested in lending him my iPad. Then the next day I knock on his door and I ask to borrow his moped. So he says, no, I'm not lending you my moped. You won't even lend me an iPad. So says the Gemara, that's revenge. That's Nekima. What's Netira? If we basically have the same story, except in this story, the ending's a little different. He says, yeah, I'll give you the moped. Because I'm not a jerk like you, who wouldn't even lend me an iPad. I'm a nice guy. I'll give you the iPad. So because he can't let it go, so that's why he is in violation of Netira. So there is a discussion, many assume that it's, even though the Gemara has a scenario where he essentially says it, that it doesn't necessarily mean he has to say it. Rashi over there relates the word in the Chumash to the Aramaic Netira, which means to protect. Right? That's a Bava Metzia term. So if somebody is protecting the issue in his heart, he's holding on to it, he's not letting it go, so that's the Isser Netira. So yeah, you could say it's Taka Chiddush here, that I'm normally not allowed to bear a grudge. Here I'm allowed to bear a grudge. So if that is the interpretation, I think you could still ask two questions on that. And the second question bothers me a little bit more. Any questions you could ask on that? Let's say, okay, this is a heter to bear a grudge.
Why should it be
mutter? So, truth is, actually, that could be both questions, because you could mean two things by that. The two questions I'm looking for, that might be both of them. So, first question, why should it be mutter if it's normally aser? So I'm explaining that, by the way, we'll be mentioning there are a few beautiful svarim on Poland. One of the things, as we said, when we talked about our excitement about learning Poland, is it's extremely lemaisa. A lot of things come up very practically. There are many contemporary halacha lemaisa svarim on Poland, so we'll be referencing some of them from time to time in the context of some of these sugyas. So some who comment on this idea, they note that the truth is the Gemara in Maseches Yuma, which we just mentioned a second ago, talking about the Isser of Nekimo Netira. So as we said, it's kind of boring. You would think that if the Torah says don't take revenge, so we're talking about putting on a ski mask and showing up at somebody's room in the middle of the night with a machete or whatever, something a little more dramatic than not lending property. So it's a little bit surprising the Gemara has this boring example. And then it sounds like from the Gemara that boring example is bedavka. Because the Gemara has a conclusion over there that this refers to issue of mamonos, so somebody not helping you in a material way. But if somebody hurts you personally, tzair de gufa, so then it's apparently permitted, according to that Gemara, to engage in the kimunatir. Nonetheless, the Gemara says still a bad idea, and we say that Hamavral Midosav, Mochumal Kolavonosav, a great plan to be on God's good side is to be somebody who forgives easily and forgets easily. The Gemara there says, Yoavav Kitzay Sashamish Begvaraso, and their love him, Vienim Ovim, Shom Chepasim, Vienim Meshivim. The people who God really loves, who really love God, are the people who are able to get insulted and they don't respond back, they don't have to do anything, they don't have to keep score. That's how Rashi explains the term Mavra Midosa. Rashi in Rosh Hashanah explains that it means you don't keep score, that Mavra Midosa literally means you're willing to forget about your measurements. What are the measurements? Midosa means some people feel they have to keep score, they have to keep track of everything anyone did to them, so somebody who doesn't keep score, that's the best move. You get forgiven for everything. God treats you the same way you treat everyone else. You forget, you forgive, you move on. God forgives you too. So as a general rule, that's what we recommend. But technically speaking, the Gemara says that Sayra de Gufa is mutter. It's mutter to take revenge. So there are some who suggest, some of these contemporary Sfarim offer that suggestion, that here, this is not simply the guy didn't lend you his moped, but the guy caused you a personal difficulty by backing out of the arrangement. So that's something that enters into the klal the Gemara has, that it's permissible to take revenge. I find that still a little bit unsatisfying for a few reasons. One reason is that it's important to note that not all the Rishonim and Paskin like that conclusion in the Gemara, that you're allowed to take revenge for personal grievances or bear a grudge for personal grievances. The Sefer Achinuch and the Rambam don't record that distinction. And it's interesting to note why, or to discuss why. First of all, as some point out, the Rambam may have had a different girsa than the Gemara. And maybe he didn't have Tzaira de Mamona and Tzaira de Gufa. Maybe he had Mile de Shmaya, Mile de Alma, that it's only appropriate to take up the vengeance, take up the cause, if it's an offense against God, an offense against the Torah, so to speak, but a personal offense, you shouldn't take revenge or bear a grudge. So there might be a Gersaic reason to Paskin differently. But also, it seems, if you look at the Tamei HaMitzvos, if you look at the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch, they have two different reasons. But the reasons that they give for the Isser of taking revenge, it makes sense that they're not machalic. Because the Rambam writes that essentially, we're afraid that if you let people take revenge about small matters, so you're going to have the Hatfields and the McCoys. Everybody's going to be going after everyone else who did anything to them, and then they're going to have to pay back for the revenge, and they'll be revenge on the revenge, and revenge on the revenge on the revenge, and it's going to go on for generations, and the world's going to fall apart. So says the Rambam, taking revenge is a terrible idea. So according to the Rambam, you see why he's not machalic between the property loans and personal offenses. It all fits into his svara of why revenge is a terrible idea. And the Sefer Achinuch has it a little differently. Sefer Achinuch says the reason that we don't want you taking revenge is because it's a distraction. That a person should recognize that whatever happens to him in this world happens for a reason. It's Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan, whatever it is, whether it's an Onesh, whether it's a Nisayon, whether it's a Gamz L'Tova, whatever it is, it happens for a reason. And if you're going to focus on, oh, it's all because of him, what he did to me, that's why this is happening, so then that's a major distraction. That's going to guarantee you're going to miss the point. So again, the Rambam and the Chinuch, both of them have reasons which aren't amenable to being machalic between different types of grievances. And the Chafetz Chaim writes in his Sefer that Lamaisi thinks it's a Sveika Deraisa. So can you take revenge for a personal grievance? He says, an Issa Deraisa, it's a Safik and a Rishon. And Lamaisi after Machmir. And Rav Kook, there's a Sefer that Rav Kook printed Ha'aris in the Chafetz Chaim. So Rav Kook commented that maybe the Rishonim don't mention it because maybe technically it is mother, but it's still a terrible idea according to their reasons, so why should they advocate it? Why should they write, oh, by the way, this option is open to you for personal grievances? So in any event, I'm not 100% sure whether or not all the Rishonim would agree that this fits into the existing heter for revenge. But I have another question. Essentially, I said Jonathan's answer could be both the questions I was looking for. So he said, why is it mutter to bear a grudge here? So we just dealt for a few minutes with the question of why it should be a loophole, so to speak. Why should it be technically mutter? But I have a different question with the same words. What's the purpose of making it mutter? What do we accomplish? Why is Mishnah saying, oh, by the way, here's a good opportunity to bear a grudge? Like the Chafetz Chaim, like Rav Kook said, you know, what do we want to recommend it for? Why would they, if that's the whole point, why would it be that that's something that we need to be told in the Mishnah? By the way, you could bear a grudge against this guy. Jonathan?
Is the format of the sentence was that it's not advocating, just saying smother. It's aim zel zel, except for el this. You can't lie and say that everything that you can't have between each other.
But what's the goal? Why is the goal to be the person of smother? Why is it smother? It's mutter because it happens to be a personal grievance,
yeah.
So it doesn't fit in, and Nabuch, you know, we wish you wouldn't have Tarumus, but that's all you're left with. Right. All you have is a grievance.
Or maybe. If you say that you should have a Tarumus, then it's more difficult.
Okay, could be. Hi?
From the Gemara, it's like that you're violating some sort of like idea, like on Misha, maybe like there's like the person who the Tarumus are on is saying something like important about their character or their. The way they do business, which could carry a lot of weight in the public opinion.
Ah, so that's a very good interpretation as well. So what you're essentially saying is the Mishnah is trying to tell you something. The Mishnah is trying to tell you that you shouldn't think the person who does this is innocent. You shouldn't think that it's a completely neutral thing, and that it has no impact on the person's standing. It does have an impact. The person is now a lower-rated Tarumus. He's somebody who has earned Tarumus. So Rav Nassim Geshetner, and the Sefer from Bava Metzia happens to favor a view like that. I want to come back to that in a minute. That's a very important possibility. So first it was Idan, right?
Adin,
sorry. Adin, everyone should welcome Adin. We haven't had a chance to meet.
Welcome
on this first day. So sorry for not welcoming you earlier. So Adin's point is well taken. We'll come back to that in a minute. There are those who understand that maybe it's something more than bearing a grudge. The Sefer Darkei Choshen, Dayan Silman, who's a prominent Dayan in Bnei Brak, Yehuda Leib Silman, so he prefers two other interpretations. He doesn't think that he mentions the possibility that it's about bearing a grudge, but he thinks it's more likely that it's one of two other possibilities. One is that you can yell at the guy, which could also be a form of natira, based on the way the Gemara has the definition of natira. Maybe that's a little bit more mistaber, because maybe that accomplishes something a little bit more. Or maybe at least it's a little bit of a protection. Okay, I can't sue the guy, but it's uncomfortable to be screamed at. And if there is a specific heter to scream at somebody, so that's a little bit of a disincentive. So if I know that if I pull out of this deal, the guy's going to scream at me with rabbinic permission, so maybe that itself is something. He can't actually sue me, but I'm not looking forward to being screamed at. Maybe that's also something that should be taken into account. But the third possibility he suggests is that it's mutter to talk about it. Now that would be a chiddush, because one would assume otherwise that there's an isser of lashon hara. And he does also assume in that context that it has to be subject to the various heterim for toelas and lashon hara, and other svarim who have similar suggestions also are very limited in how much they want you to talk about this. But that's a possible interpretation as well. And that's something that's interesting to consider. The whole idea of Lashon Hara L'Toelas is a very complicated area. In general, we know that Lashon Hara is permitted and perhaps required and mandatory if you're going to be saving someone from harm. And the Chafetz Chaim has a bunch of conditions. He has essentially seven conditions that he feels are necessary in order to justify or to require that kind of Lashon Hara. Others disagreed. Others didn't think you need all of those conditions. The Chazon Ish is quoted as saying, you just need to intend the toelas. That's what the whole phrase requires. It's a big discussion exactly how much you need that. It's actually a big discussion. There's a whole sefer about it. The sefer that's either in the library or on my shelf, belonging to the library, that somebody wrote a whole sefer discussing one point in the Chafetz Chaim. That the Chafetz Chaim essentially says that in order to justify speaking Lashon Hara L'Toelas, you have to have pure intent only L'Toelas, and you can't have any existing grudges against the guy that you are also satisfying by saying this Lashon Hara. And others felt that that was a very problematic condition, because if you need to say something in order to protect others from harm, the fact that you happen to also hate this guy stop you from saving other people. And they raise the comparison that they think it's like saying that if somebody is sick on Yom Kippur and he needs to eat because he's sick, so would we say, well, he's only allowed to eat if he hates the food. But if he likes the food, so he has kavana both that he's saving his life and he likes the food, then we won't let him do it. Probably wouldn't say it like that. We'd say that a chol has even in Kippur even though he likes the food. So too, if he has a grudge against this person, if he is indulging by protecting somebody the toelas, it's hard to say that that's a reason not to do it. So there's a whole sefer that is devoted to defending the Chafetz Chaim on this point, this one issue. So the Chafetz Chaim's conditions are somewhat controversial, but one could argue that maybe this makes a little bit of sense, that maybe this isn't a full-blown toelas in the normal sense. The guy isn't a predator, per se. But that maybe within the business world, it's legitimate that if a person backs out of deals, so then that should be something that's a part of his profile, so to speak. It's a part of his Amazon reviews. Instead of getting all the 5 stars, he should have a few 3 stars because he occasionally backs out of his commitment. And that maybe from a Bechina of Hilchos Lashon Hara, maybe the Mishnah is saying that it's legitimate for him to grumble about this guy, to grumble out loud and to say, I have a taina on this guy, a public taina. Again, the question, how public should he make it? So that Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein, who has a sefer on Bava Metzia, has a sefer on a lot of Masechtos, and from his Daf Yomi Shirim, so he has a comment later on in this parak. He doesn't address this specific suggestion, but he talks about if a worker does a bad job, are you allowed to be mafarsim it? Or basically, if a worker changes the terms of the deal, I think the case he was talking about was the guy agreed to do something at a certain price, and then got there and decided the price should be higher. And it was then too late to find somebody else. So are you allowed to be mafarsim this? And he was very negative about being with fire cement. He thought there were a lot of significant Lashon Hara concerns. So you could argue about whether or not it's true lahalacha, but that perhaps is a little bit more of a compelling interpretation. Right? That you could say that this means you're allowed to talk about it. Normally you would be an Issur Lashon Hara. But the Mishnah is saying this is a legitimate thing to discuss. It's legitimate to make people aware that the person's level of commitment is not perfect. It's not a full-blown toelas where you have to make sure everyone knows the guy is a serial killer. But it's enough that it's worth mentioning, kind of a low-grade type of toelas head. That's a possible suggestion as to what it means. But there's another suggestion. Again, the Nelson Pergin above Messiah says very much along the lines of what Adin was saying, is that maybe the Mishnah is trying to tell us that the person is doing something wrong. The person who pulls out is doing something wrong. What's he doing wrong? So perhaps he has a number of suggestions that you can access. By the way, the Nelson Pergin is available for free download on HebrewBooks.org if you want to have a copy of the Sefer and Bava Metzia on your computer. So his first comment on the Mishnah over here, he says that he thinks, first of all, the person is in violation of Yasis HaYashar Va'atov. Makes reference to that Ramban in Parshas Veschana, talked about a little bit in last week's parsha here, that Vasisa Hayashav Atov requires you to act justly with people and fairly with people, even in ways the Torah doesn't spell out. So perhaps this is one of them. And perhaps this is also a reflection of the idea that Gemara quotes the pasuk in Tzfanya, like Sheiris Yisrael lo Yasu Avla, Netzach Yisrael lo Yishaker. And part of the character of the Jewish people is to not do something that is crooked, not do something that is dishonest. It's also a problem of Yahav Florecha Kamocha, as he notes, which the Gemara phrases in the negative. Gemara Misach HaShabbos of the Lamed Aleph has the statement from Hillel, Ema Dalach Sani L'Chevrecha Lo Sabit, like that which is bad to you, you shouldn't do to others. So perhaps all of that is included. And perhaps there's another major theme which is conveyed here, and the overlap between these themes is something that requires a little bit of clarification. So here again in our synergy aspirations, it works out well that we started Hazav in recent Sundays, and even though we want to skip to the Onos who gives an Hazav, we did the beginning. So there's a concept there that in essence the first Mishnah in Hazav has a strong parallel to this Mishnah over here. Right, what's the possible parallel between that Mishnah and this Mishnah? There really is a kind of a strong overlap between the two. Sorry? Right, so what does that Mishnah essentially say? It says that theoretically you can back out of a deal if you have not yet been moshech the object, if you're selling something and the item has not gone through Mashiach, even if there's been mos, paid for it, so the two parties can back out. But at the same time, we say don't back out, that you should realize you're subject to a Misha Parah, which the Gemara says later on, and Afim and Chesim and Beis, is a Klala. It's essentially a curse. We say Misha Parah Manshei Dor HaMabul, that the same God who extracted payment from sinners in previous generations, he will extract punishment from Misha Eino Omeid B'Diburo, from someone who doesn't live up to his word. And then the Gemara, I put it on the Mar Makomos actually, take a look. It's also a very long passage in the Gemara, but it's worth seeing if you get a chance. Daf Ben Tesamet Aleph. So the Gemara goes into the whole concept of Mechusar Amana, that there are people who are considered to be lacking in faith, considered to be basically lacking in integrity. And the Gemara connects that to the concept of Hein Tzedek. And then the Torah talks about the Hin Tzedek, and you have to have just measurements, which the Gemara has a drasha. Hin Tzedek is Hein Tzedek, Hein Tzelcha Tzedek, V'lav Shecha Tzedek, that you should say things that are true and that you should live up to them. So there is a question, does this Gemara basically mean to say that one is perhaps in that category as well? Is that the same thing? Is Mechusar Emunah, Mechusar Amana the same kind of thing as somebody who provokes Tarumas? Some thought yes. Some connected this to a Ramah. It's 2 days in a Ramah, it's in a Reish Dalet. If you get a chance to take a look. So it's interesting, it seemed to be overlapping terms. And in fact, since the Gemara has very strong language about this Mechusar Amana, Gemara that says that he's subject to a Klala, and that's because he's Eino Osa Maisa Amcha. So if you say they are the same thing, that's the direction in which the Nas Imperial went. The Tshuva, the Imre Yosha, the Imre Yosha was Rebbeir Arik, and Chelik Beis and Kuf Chav Tes, where he talks about a shidduch, somebody who backs out of the shidduch. So even if theoretically he has the right to do so, but he's considered to be in the category of Sheiris Yisrael Yasa Avla, Mutter Kol Marasha, and something's taken very seriously. So you could identify these terms together, or you could say they address different realms. that perhaps the whole idea of Misha Para and Omen Bidiburo and Hain Tzedek, etc., that could be perceived essentially as a Bein Adam La'atzmo principle. That one is required to be honest and to be a person of integrity. And that's a Amida that one is obligated to maintain regardless of how others interact with it. And the Tarumis, that's an interpersonal idea. That causing somebody a certain low-level grievance, one that on the one hand is not enough to extract in Besdin, but on the other hand is not nothing. So perhaps that's the Benod Mechavero component. That sometimes you have a deal where your backing out causes the other guy a problem, and he can't necessarily sue you, but he can have this tarumas, whatever it means. So that's actually a question. Lamaisa, what the Nas Imperio was assuming is essentially there's an isser here. Yes, sir.
This type of idea that was only Taroma's concern was just saying, if Beishtim would possibly something based on Pshar, would they still be able to actually make a Mamonos deal, find someone for something like this, or not necessarily?
What's the scenario?
I mean, this is a scenario where the din would be that they can only bring a Taromas, but the Beishtim is going by Pshara.
So they're saying you should do something.
Would they be able to actually do something then with Mamon? Or?
Would the Bezin be able to?
Yeah.
So Pashtas, yes. Pashtas, Bezin can say, listen, you know, there is some restitution here. And there is actually also a discussion in the poskim about whether there is a chiyuv la'aseh sedei shemayim. So that would we say that some in the poskim do assume like that? Would you say that somebody wants to be completely yasher and tov, as the Nas Imperio indicates, would pay for the loss, so to speak? Except that the loss in this case, for the most part, is not quantifiable. So it's a question of how exactly you step up to the plate. But it would certainly seem to be a legitimate area for a pshara to take place. So this provokes a couple of other questions. So first of all, so is this indeed the case that it's usur to do? Or should we say that it's mutter to do and you can absorb the tarumas? So the Sma read the tour as saying actually that it is mutter to do. We'll take a look eventually in the beginning of Shema Megimel. Tour over there. And others understood the intent to be, again, if the person has tarumas, so then, like I didn't say, you're not doing things right. There is a reason to have a tiny on you. So what is the reason for the tarumas? So it's actually a question in the Rishon, and it has some nafkaminas. But you'll see eventually when you look at the rest of the Ma'amar Komos. So what is the issue here? What's the problem? See, it backed out. So what? So let the guy get another job. Let the boss hire other workers. So why does he have any right to have tarumas? So most of Rishonim understand, because even if the assumption is that he's able to get another job or that the boss can hire other workers, so then, there's still Torah involved. If he's not able to get other workers, or to get another job, then things become a little more complicated, as we'll see. But assuming he can find another job, so a lot of Rishonim understand, Tosfos and others, that yes, he isn't really undergoing a monetary loss, but because he had to schlep, because it was an extra tircha, so the guy has a right to be angry that you put him in this situation where he has to have extra Torah. The Ritva is also on the list. The Ritva is quoted in the Shittim Mekubetzes, the very beginning of the sixth parak. So the Ritva has a few other reasons. The Ritva says that it's nira kechuka. Essentially, it looks like a joke. It looks like a game. You make a deal, you back out. You make a deal, you back out. It looks like it's not a serious thing. That's where you get this
Tarum Mishram. And he also mentions an idea, which is not quoted in the Poskim, that maybe it's going to create Lazos Fasayim, that maybe people will gossip that the workers got hired, then all of a sudden they don't have a job anymore. So people will speculate. Why don't they have a job anymore? And because of that, maybe that's a reason not to have such a circumstance. Others point to another Gemara, which we also see on the list. The Gemara, a little bit later in this parak, and Daf Ayin Tes, when it tests some at Aleph, the Gemara invokes Tarumas in some other contexts. And Ayin Tes in the Beis, so the Gemara talks about a guy who rented a ship. And the ship, he was using it to get merchandise from one place to another. And halfway through the journey, he was able to sell off all his merchandise. So he's not interested in keeping the ship anymore after he unloads his stuff. So he could do that. He could back out now. And the owner of the ship can have Tarumas on him. So the Gemara asks, in the middle of Ayin Tes and Midbeis, so what's the Tarumas? So says the Gemara, Mishum Shinui Daita. Inami Mishum Lashli Yaseira. Lashli Yaseira is he's going to have to buy more materials now to stop and to go. So it's a little more of an investment on his part. But Rishonim, on our sugya, some of them quote this line, Mishum Shinui Daita. What does that mean, Shinui Daita? So it seems to mean that things have changed for him in a emotional way. So Rashi understands it, Frank.
Gemara with the assumption that when he closes the deal early, he's also going to get some of the money back?
Well, he's not going to be he's not going to be using the boat for the rest of the time, so he's not going to have to pay for the rest of the time that he's using the boat. So the look at Rashi. So Rashi understands Shinoi Daita as he thought he was going to get through things quickly, and now he's got to stop and start, etc. Everything's going to take longer. So that change of plan, that change in what he was ready for, that's something that's going to irk him. And that's something that justifies the Tarumas. Tosus has a different understanding. That Tosus over here, it's included in a line. The middle of this toast was the middle of the page. Mishum shinui das shlo hurgol amzeh ha'acher. V'yod l'snahi v'fidaito. That he was used to getting along with this guy. And now he's going to have to get along with somebody else. So that's something that is going to annoy him. He was, you know, if somebody has a roommate, and the roommate pulls out, and he's able to offer a replacement. So the original roommate might say, okay, great, I'm not losing on the rent, but I was just about getting used to the first guy, now I got to get used to a different guy. So maybe that's where the Tarumas comes from. Based on that interpretation, so some of the later Svarim ask, why is it that the other Rishonim don't seem to be concerned about this Shinoi Daita in the context of our Mishnah? Because many of the Poskim assume, sounds like this from the Shulchan Aruch, that they're only interested in the Torah consideration. That if these workers have to really push themselves to get another job, so then they're entitled to have Tarumas. But if they can get another job easily, then there's no Tarumas. And they don't seem to worry about what about the Shinoi Daita consideration that we find in the Gemara. So some of these Svarim suggest that Shinoi Daita is about changing who you have to get used to. So if they haven't really started working for this guy yet, there's no actual relationship yet, so that maybe that element's not going to be there. Michael, I'm sorry, you didn't end up.
Is there a significant concern for cutting off this guy's livelihood?
No, it doesn't seem to be that's what's happening. The fact is that he'll be able to fix it, he's just inconvenienced. The damages that we're pointing to, as you said, we'll see if there's situations where there are more significant damages. But the assumptions that we're working off of is that it's possible to make up the monetary issues. There are other reasons to grumble. So because you have to work to find somebody else, if you will find it, you have to work to do it, or because just changing your plans, changing your mindset, these are all more subtle things than your actual monetary loss that you shouldn't have.
But if there wasn't.
So when that happened, there's an actual loss that we'll talk about. And tomorrow we'll start to talk about where if you've gotten to a stage in the work where now things are hard to fix. So we'll get to that.
And additionally, mm-hmm. can you read the Mishnah as Zed referring to the money and not the silver?
Possibly. That's also a discussion. Yeah, maybe there's a difference between who's doing the backing out. Yes, there is such a possibility. We'll get to that as well. So part of the discussion, there is a whole debate, which relates to what I said before about the Ramah. The Ramah and Simon Reish Dalet, the Ramah seems to have two dayas about what if you have a good reason to back out? What if there's a significant change in the facts on the ground? The Ramah there talks about if there's two rates. So now they realize that he could be really doing much better to a different worker who's going to give him a different rate. So would that be a justified reason to pull out without being considered to be a mechuser or a woman? So the Ramah quotes two days about this. And he seems to incline towards chumra, like the first day, that it's still wrong. And others question whether that's true. The Bach, as the Nosa Kalim points out, the Bach didn't seem to understand it that way. And the Aruch HaShulchan didn't understand that way. The Aruch HaShulchan assumed that if there was a justifiable umdana, so to speak, that things had really changed, so then Anan Sa'adi, that it's justifiable to change things for that reason. And put on the list Taz and Yeridei. Do you have any comments about that?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously understand why it would be advantageous for the Baal Bais, but it's still the same. The reasoning doesn't change. It's still Tircha for the Baal.
Correct, but maybe that Tircha is expected in terms of business, that if we have conflicting needs, so now you're going to have a tircha, but I'm going to have a very significant difference in how much things are going to work out for me. So maybe it's justifiable to weigh up things that way. Adin?
And Ramah holds the same way if the workers realize they can be getting paid much more somewhere else than if the.
That's what it sounds like. Ramah has the 2 days, and it sounds like he's machmir like the first day. Others didn't accept that, and there's a thought that if there is a big difference in the reality, so that is a reason to back out without whatever someone holds,
mm-hmm. whether or not it's a good enough reason. It goes both ways, though. That the workers can back out if they can get
right in both directions. Right, this is a significant. That's what it seems like. The Taz, if you look at the Taz in Yeridea, which I put on the list as well, it talks about the din in Yeridea because it's in Hilchos Mila. And it's Reish Tanuch Beis. Then Hilchos Mila. So the Ramah says that if you have a mole, talks about who you need to find in order to have a mole, the bris. And the Ramah says if you have a mole, so then you shouldn't back out. You shouldn't dump him for another mole. And there the Taz says that that's generally true. But if, let's say there's a self-evident circumstance that there's somebody who you obviously would have wanted as a mole, and had you known he was available, you clearly would have gone for him first, and now you find that he is available, so then he thinks in that circumstance that's not problematic. So that's somewhat open to debate. Again, this is something the latest farm talk about, and the general assumption seems to be in some of the contemporary Hilchos Polim farm. They assume that if there really is a very significant hefsed, that if it's a situation where you could see that things have really changed and the boss or the workers clearly would not be in a good position staying in this current commitment, so then he thinks there's the minig is to be makel under those circumstances. But if
things are so clearly and radically different, then that's a justification. And that wouldn't even be subject to Tyrumas. It's interesting, just in terms of how practical these things can get. So the Sefer Pisrei Choshen was written by Rav Yaakov Yeshaya Bloy Zatzal, who passed away just a few weeks ago. He was apparently originally a banker, and he was holding so much in all the monetary issues and in halacha that he became very valuable to the poskim, and he ended up becoming a big posek himself and writing many volumes of halacha, other areas as well. But he has a lot of Choshen Mishpat and Mamon Sfarim, so he has a Sefer on Ribbis and a Sefer on Staka, and in addition to a Sefer on Mezuzah and a Sefer on Chala and a Sefer on Erevin. But his multi-volume work, Pesachei Choshen, he talks about a lot of Choshen Mishpat and Yonin. So he assumes there that if you hire a worker, if you make a deal with a worker and the worker shows up late, so then you find a need to get someone else, so that's not going to be anything the worker can have a tie on. And even if you haven't hit a hefsid because of this, but you have no way of knowing when the guy's even going to show up. So you have a right to have workers at the time that the job is supposed to be taking place. So if the worker decides he's not going to be there then, so then he can't complain against the employer if the employer decides to hire somebody else in his space. So as he points out, this comes up very often in real life in practical circumstances, when not just for us, not just for CEOs, but for all of us who call for a taxi. We know that it often happens that you call for a taxi and the taxi is late in showing up, and then other taxis happen to pass by. So to back out of your agreement to hire this guy who hasn't shown up yet, to take somebody new, so they assume that that's not an area where the other person can really have a complaint. They often do. They show up and then you've already called a different taxi. They do get very upset. But the assumption is, he writes over there, that if it's a real emergency, that you have to be, they have to be there at a specific time, so then you should really be clear that you have to leave at that moment and not a minute later. But if you haven't specified that that's the case, so then you still have the right to hire somebody else if they don't show up on time. But it's reasonable to give them a little bit of time, certainly preferable to call them if you can and tell them that you're hiring somebody else. And the Sefer Darchei Choshen we mentioned before, so I don't know how he got to this, but he has specific measurements, he says. 10 minutes for a local ride, that's reasonable. For a ride outside of the city, 20 minutes. If they show up after that, then it's certainly legitimate to hire a different driver. So again, that's very specific in terms of the practicality. But it all plugs into this whole idea of what exactly justifies a person backing out of such an arrangement without it being subject to all of the opprobrium, of all of the possible yisurim or the grievances that we've seen so far from the Mishnah. So we'll chazer in a minute what we spoke about so far, and where does this take us? So now from here, so you'll see, hopefully maybe tomorrow or the next day, you'll see some of the marmakomos that we saw, that we talked about today in terms of the various underpinnings and the concepts that are included in this Mishnah. And the idea that the Gemara is going to say, and the Gemara says in a few other places, that a poel has a certain specific benefit that he is allowed to pull out even in the middle of the workday. What exactly does that mean relating to this halacha? What exactly is the nature of that special dispensation? Is a dispensation of something else? That's something that we'll have to examine in a little more detail. So just to quickly chazer what we spoke about, so we had one addendum to Lifnei Iver discussion, and we mentioned Rabbi Levine's point that Rashi in the Pasuk of Anas Devarim, Rashi says bad advice is Anas Devarim, and the question could be asked, isn't it also Lifnei Iver? And Rabbi Levine suggested that if you give somebody bad advice and he takes it, then it's Lifnei Iver. If you give somebody bad advice and he doesn't take it because he recognizes you're giving him bad advice, so he's offended, that's when it's onah dvarim. And then we talked about other issues of the relationship between the employer and the employee, and how our Mishnah talks about the deal that was made to hire someone, to work for someone. Either side, if they pull out, there is tarumas. And the question of what is the significance of that statement, so we saw a couple of possibilities. It could mean nothing, it could just mean there's no tvius mamon, but there isn't really anything else of significance. Or it could mean something positive, something affirmative, well, negative and positive, something bad that is actual. So what is tarumus mean? So we saw a couple of possibilities. One possibility is you could bear a grudge, as opposed to the normal heter, the normal iser of lositor, or the normal iser of sinah. So we were a little bit unsatisfied with that answer. Why should it be mutter? So we discussed whether or not there is a loophole of Tzairi Degufa, and whether or not the Rambam and Sefer Achinuch and others would accept that. But even if there is, we're not sure what it accomplishes. We should be angry at somebody for what purpose? So others suggest that it means you're allowed to yell at the guy, and that's perhaps somewhat of a disincentive. I don't think I mentioned before, the Nas Imperio also has a comment along those lines, that in the context of Ocheach Tochiach, that there are those who understand the Torah says, when we have a mitzvah of Tochacha, it mentions that in proximity to the Yisr of Los Isla, that Ocheach Tochiach is a Misacha, Los Isla of Chet, and right before that it says, Los Isla Sachicha Bilvavecha. So there are those who, among the Rishonim, there are those who read those two psukim together, and say, you shouldn't hate your brother in your heart. If you have a taina on somebody, you shouldn't just bear inside and not do anything about it. Rather, you should talk to him about it, and you should try to find out why he did what he did. So that's another suggestion here, that this way is what you should do. The guy made you angry, so you should discuss why he did it. You could be mochiach him about it, and that's what tarumus means. We mentioned the Darche Choshen, who had the understanding addition to the idea that you could yell at him, that you could speak Lashon Hara about him, that you could discuss the grievance. He assumes within the klalim of the specific conditions for Toelis. Talked about that a little bit.
According to that, what's the Chiddush?
Right, according to that, what is the Chiddush? So I also am bothered by that a little bit. So I think the Chiddush is that this is a low-grade Toelis, that you could think this is not a real sakana to anyone, but that this is something that the Mishnah is saying, it's valid that this should be a part of the consideration. This is, you might not think that this is the kind of thing you really have to warn people about, but you're entitled. You're entitled to express this grievance and to let it be a part of the public record and to let it have that consequence. And we mentioned also that not all poskim were too enthusiastic about going too far with that. And we discussed the Nos Imperio's point, and Dina said also, then perhaps the thrust of the Mishnah is to tell you the guy's doing something wrong. We discussed what it is he's doing wrong. The whole story. Then we talked about whether or not indeed is this something that overlaps with Mechusar Amana and Hain Tzedek and that whole Gemara and Daf Mem Ches and Daf Mem Tes. And we suggested that there perhaps are two different dimensions, that one's talking about your midos, you should always be a person of integrity and honesty, and tarumus is dafka the interpersonal taina, that if you cause somebody a disruption, a loss is not the right word, you cause somebody a disruption, so then they have a justification to have a taina on you. And then we talked about what is the basis for the tarumus. Most of the Rishonim understand is because of the torech, because the guy has to schlep to replace you, and therefore they also assume that if there's no torech, then there isn't any tarumus either. And the other Rishonim have other explanations, which maybe would still apply even without the Torah. And the idea the Ritva talks about, kechuka, it'll look like a joke, or that it'll provoke gossip, or lozus fasayim. Others point to the Gemara and Ayin Tess about the Shinoi Daita. We saw different views of what Shinoi Daita means, that he's got to change his plans, or he's got to get used to a new worker. And then some say that's not mentioned in the context of the Mishnah because they haven't started working for him yet, so it's not a real issue. And then we talked about the question of, indeed, is it asur l'chatchila to do, or is it mutar l'chatchila to do, just you have to swallow the tarumas, and are there circumstances where it's different? What if there is a big change in the mitzias? What if there's two different rates, like the Ramah talks about, two dais in the Ramah? and he was no to lahachmer, many others were makel, and some suggest that the minig is, if there really is a very significant, undeniable loss, that the practice is to makel under those circumstances. And then we talked also about the question of what happens if the worker doesn't show up. So then presumably the poskim in the recent era have assumed it's justifiable for the employer to decide to hire somebody else, and it comes up all the time with the taxis, and talked about the various suggestions of how much leeway you should give them in order to be nice. But strictly speaking, you can hire somebody else, because that's certainly a minimal requirement the boss is going to have, that the employees are there at the time of the avoda. Okay, any questions about any of that? Any issues? Any complaints? Any hasagas? All right, so we will daven mincha. Who's going to